and we will continue to some issues in interaction and activating students in online teaching. So just as one basic question, what is the difference in face-to-face teaching compared to online teaching? Well, we will look at some issues, and we know that you have already been doing this for quite a long, so you are already experienced, but just I will go fast through some topics which will then guide you to the group work that we will have during this session as well. So some tips and ideas from both the real life experience and as well from the studies. So usually students need more guidance and instructions compared to face-to-face teaching. And one reason is also, well, one reason behind this is also that you don't, when you're teaching face-to-face and you're giving instructions, you can see the looks on their faces. You can kind of guess if they understood or not, and then you can give some more instructions. But if, especially if it's something that they learn on their own pace, not much interaction with the teacher, then it's up to them if they understand the instructions or if they can, if they have any other networks where to contact each others and ask. And we also know from the experience, everyone who's been teaching, that some students, they need more guidance than others. And of course, we are different, we're individuals. Some of us understand the written instructions better, and for someone, it's best to make a short video introduction and then they get the idea. And we will get back to these accessibility issues on Thursday's session, because this is one very topical issue there, to understand the needs of the students. And as a kind of hint for the Thursday's session, I can already share you the information that it's the number of students with special educational needs or disabilities in higher education studies is surprisingly high. It depends on the study and the country, but it's like in the Finnish and British and American studies, it's something between 8 to 14%. So it's not a small, it's not a small minority. There are issues that the teachers may not be aware of. But we'll get back to accessibility issues on Thursday. But then, now that we are doing or teaching online, choose the channels and the mode of communication. When and how are you communicating with your students? Like, I have an example from the beginning of the millennium, something like 2003 or something, or 2002. I was teaching a new course with something like 350 students, and someone else had designed that course and then change a job. So I got the great opportunity to take care of this course and give it to teach these 350 students. And there were a lot of online discussions. And I can assure you that it was horrid work, because they kind of expected me to, I had shared them to smaller groups and they had certain topics to discuss for a certain time, but they kind of expected me to follow all the discussions, or they were kind of testing me that, well, I don't know if the teacher has time to read all these discussions. So I actually spent quite a lot of hours just scanning through the discussions and then reacting to these, of course, and commenting, so that they have the feeling that yes, the teacher is here and is following your discussions. So, and another question: when are you available for your students? If it's like an very self-paced course with a lot of independent work, then if it's would you offer them 1 hour Zoom session, like live video conferencing session once a week for the questions and answers? Or will you tell them that you will visit the discussion forum once or twice a week and answer there, or do you want them to send you email? Anyway, it's important that whichever method you choose, just tell the students so they know that they won't be sending you tons of emails of all the same with all the same questions when you could might just as well have one discussion forum in Moodle for them. This might maybe obvious for you, but just wanting to say this because I know that you are teaching courses with very different amount of students. If you have like 200 students, then you always have to imagine the worst case scenario if they are all sending you individual emails of the same questions. And another issue, it's good to communicate already before the course starts. And this topic we have already been discussing, the lack of presence and nonverbal communication in online live sessions if the students don't have their webcams on and maybe keep muted all the time, you're not able to see all reactions or if there aren't any. So the worst case scenario is this image of an empty auditorium where all the students are kind of in the invisibility mode and you don't know what they are doing. If they may be listening very carefully or they may be absent, they may have logged in online and then have gone doing something else. So and what to do? When it's a good question because I have been discussing with both students and teachers, and students say that if their internet connection don't allow them to keep the webcams on, well, you can't really force them. But then the teachers say that it's terrible because you don't know if they're listening at all or if they understand what they say. But probably if you kind of activate them, ask questions, check, repeat things, or of course I could do now like point some of you on your name and ask, what do you think? I know on some courses they have agreed to keep the webcams on, but it's also if the internet connection doesn't allow it, then you can't really force the students. But we know that this is a challenge. And then here in Finland, as I already said, that we have very student-centered pedagogical frameworks here. The students participate and are active and have their own voice. And we like to use collaborative learning approach and kind of trust the inner motivation for the studies and don't want to force them to do things, but kind of trust that they are motivated. And we also pay attention to this student agency, meaning that they are learning through meaningful activities that are relevant to learners. And this is specifically important in adult education, like in continuous learning, lifelong learning, or when you're offering micro-credentials to busy business people who want to update their information on something. They don't want to waste their time to something that they don't feel is meaningful and relevant. So I think this kind of needs some motivation speech or kind of opening the things to students, kind of justifying why are we doing this and why you will learn this. For example, some teachers from our university would like to use Teams instead of Zoom for the reason that it's Teams, Microsoft Teams and other Microsoft tools are more widespread in the working life. So they're kind of already thinking these 21st century skills and working life skills that they want to teach students how to use these tools. And this I will just touch fast because this is probably clear to you. And anyway, I have shared the material in Moodle. But if we think about the learning, asynchronous versus synchronous learning, well, it's all about the time and place and pace. So in synchronous learning, like we are doing now, it occurs at the same time. Well, not in the same place now because we are video, in the virtual place, yes. face to face or in the digital world. We are doing this at the same time. You do not control, the students do not control the time or place or pace, but it's kind of more teacher-led. Of course, depending on the pedagogical views and tools, it may be differently as well. But anyway, the core idea that the students have now access to teacher and peer support while completing assignments and tasks, they're not alone. Well, as compared to asynchronous learning, which is of course very flexible for students, you can do it in any time and any place you wish, like now students working at home and can take their own pace of learning, but and they work can work independently, but the negative effect may be that they may feel that they don't have all the support they would like to have. And of course, the reality is not often like either or, but blended learning combines both of them. And for example, we could use synchronous work as pre or asynchronous work as pre or post tasks for live sessions. And then I found a nice, oh, I'm sharing you a nice image that I found from one professor's, American professor, Caitlin Tucker's blog, just examples of asynchronous learning. It provides students with a high degree of flexibility and autonomy. They can control their pace of learning, which lends itself to the following activities. So these are just examples. I would like to point out some of these because I have now heard feedback from our teachers that students seem to like listening to podcasts. We have been providing video lectures for a long time. Our university has its own video platform, an in-house product which is older than YouTube. We started this video platform in 2003. So provided videos is nothing new to us, but now we have realized that actually students enjoy when they can go, for example, jogging, or if they are driving a car or bike or whatever, they're not able to watch, but they can listen. So they like to listen to podcasts, and also as our students are so effective, they have found the possibility to change the pace. So they may even be listening to the videos or audio recordings with 1.5 or even double speed. So they even save time. Oh dear. But this just as a hint that it doesn't always have to be a video. And I know some teachers really don't like to put their face on the videos, but it could also be podcasts. For example, I know one teacher, she's sharing a lot of scientific articles as course materials. And then she has done like brief summary of each article as a podcast, which is, I think, very good service for the students. But she has decided to do that. So she said that she gets a lot of good feedback from the students. And then what is important and remarkable in asynchronous learning is the human connection, of course, because when we are at the same time, at the same physical or virtual place, then we can discuss, we can check the understanding of the issues, we can provide personalized instructions and, for example, do some assignments or practicing together. So this is probably a question that we will be facing after this pandemic situation helps and we will be able to honestly choose. But just as an idea, that synchronous sessions are not always practical, because we all know these situations when students cannot attend. They have this and that, or they have to take care of their siblings, for example, so they cannot really concentrate on the live session. So if you don't need interaction, then you can might just as well make recordings, and you can also make students work in smaller groups by themselves between the online meetings. And as said previously, use these asynchronous pre and post tasks for synchronous sessions. I think it was a very good question I read on some article that, how should I spend my limited time with students in the classroom or in video conferencing sessions? What is the best use of that time? I think it's a good question. And then just some examples of tools. This is not a perfect list, and some tools are kind of, they could be on, or actually even are, like quizzes and polls can be on both sides. And then I really hesitated putting email there, because I wish you don't use email to get assignments from back from students, for example, but it in many universities, it may be the main information channel, of course. Yes, and very good point from Matthew as well in chat. Asynchronous can also be very useful if your students are all around the world. That's how you avoid the problem of jet lag. Yes, very good. And also, no need to try to find the convenient time slot for group works or for lectures. That's true. And then a few more slides before I divide you to small group discussions. So the role of interaction, also according to various studies, it is crucial for a successful online course. You need to build the collaboration between the teacher and students, and also between the students. And as we all know, getting to know each other makes it easier for the students to collaborate. So all kind of introductions or warm-up activities are very good ways to create a good atmosphere. Especially in this time, we seem to have increasing amount of mental issues, mental problems. We, of course, for many reasons. So we don't always know what kind of situation there is in students' lives. So we already know that when there is no peer support, some people may be very isolated, away from their families, and now they can't even meet their peers, so it may cause all kinds of difficulties. And two more slides to go before we start a group discussion. So you may have heard and may already be using this flipped learning or flipped classroom pedagogical approach. So it is a shift from teacher-centered instruction to learner-centered approach. And it simply turns these live sessions into opportunities for students to discuss and ask questions, rather than just listen to a lecture and have the material delivered to them. Like, for example, this kind of introduction lecture might just as well be as a recording, and then we would use the time slot for discussion, as we will be using soon. And the students are then actively constructing and sharing knowledge. So the idea is to give the background information in advance, and the online session is then used to deepen and share the knowledge and go through the questions and issues and maybe do some small group work. And for example, in our Department of Physics, they started using this flipped learning method in their basic studies, because typically the physics in the university is suddenly much more difficult than in college before going to university. And there has been a very big or relatively big number of dropouts in the first year students because it's just too much. They find it too difficult. So in our department of physics, they started using this flipped learning method. They actually branded it and they call it the prime time learning because they say that it's prime time that you are using with the teacher. Now, this is your opportunity to ask questions and learn more. So they have prepared a lot of short video recordings going through these phenomena of physics, basics of physics, and then in the live sessions before the COVID, it was in the classrooms, but now they do it online. Then they go through the issues and questions and problems, and the learning has improved, so they can see it in the grades the students get, and also smaller amount of dropout students because they can help and support them better. And soon we will ask how many of you have already used flipped learning. But one more slide to go. So how to engage the students? So we think the answer is to activate the students. Don't let them shift away, share their attention to somewhere else if possible. So you can divide the content into smaller units, engage the students with tasks, polls, chats, group work in between. And there are a lot of free online tools to this use. For example, Padlet or Mentimeter or Flinger we have used in this course. And like we have also used during the course, we have Zoom breakout rooms. There's whiteboard, as we have been doing, sharing, dividing you to smaller groups and then coming back to the main meeting. So it is time to activate you. I will now stop the recording.